This is what had occurred at Bath, England, 23 years before. London Times, April 24, 1871. That, upon the 22nd of April, 1871, a storm of glutinous drops neither jellyfish nor masses of frog spawn, but something of a line missing here in original text. Ed. Railroad Station, at Bath. Many soon developed into a worm-like chrysalis, about an inch in length. The account of this occurrence in the Zoologist, February 6, 2686, is more like the edentatum, of minute forms, said to have been infusoria, not forms about an inch in length. Trans. Ent. SOC of London, 1871 PROCXXII. That the phenomenon has been investigated by the Reverend Elginins, of Bath. His description is of minute worms in filmy envelopes. He tries to account for their segregation. The mystery of it is, what could have brought so many of them together? Many other falls we shall have record of, and in most of them segregation is the great mystery. A whirlwind seems anything but a segregative force. Segregation of things that have fallen from the sky has been avoided as most deep-dyed of the damned. Mr. Jenins conceives of a large pool, in which were many of these spherical masses, of the pool drying up and concentrating all in a small area, of a whirlwind and scooping all up together. But several days later, more of these objects fell in the same place. That such marksmanship is not attributable to whirlwind seems to me to be what we think we mean by common sense. It may not look like common sense to say that these things had been stationary over the town of Bath, several days. The seven black rains of Slains. The four red rains of Siena. An interesting sidelight on the mechanics of orthodoxy is that Mr. Jenins dutifully records the second fall, but ignores it in his explanation. R.P. Gregg, one of the most notable of catalogers of meteoritic phenomena, records, Philosophy Mag, 4-8-463, falls of viscid substance in the years 1652, 1686, 1718, 1796, 1811, 1819, 1844. He gives earlier dates, but I practice exclusions, myself. In the report of the British Association, 1860-63, Gregg records a meteor that seemed to pass near the ground, between Barsdorf and Freiburg, Germany. The next day a jelly-like mass was found in the snow. Unseasonableness for either spawn or nostoc. Gregg's comment in this instance is, curious if true. But he records without modification the fall of a meteorite at Gotha, Germany, September 6, 1835, leaving a jelly-like mass on the ground. We are told that this substance fell only 3 feet away from an observer. In the report of the British Association, 1855-94, according to a letter from Gregg to Professor Baden-Powell, at night, October 8, 1844, near Koblenz, a German, who was known to Gregg, and another person saw a luminous body fall close to them. They returned next morning and found a gelatinous mass of grayish color. According to Gladney's account, Annals of Philosophy, N.S., 12-94, a viscous mass fell with a luminous meteorite between Siena and Rome, May, 1652, viscous matter found after the fall of a fireball, in Lusatia, March, 1796, fall of a gelatinous substance, after the explosion of a meteorite, near Heidelberg, July, 1811. In the Edinburgh Philosophical Journal, 1-234, the substance that fell at Lusatia is said to have been of the color and odor of dried, brown varnish. In the Amer. Jour. Sci. 1-26-133, it is said that gelatinous matter fell with a globe of fire, upon the island of Lethe, India, 1718. In the Amer. Jour. Sci. 1-26-396, in many observations upon the meteors of November, 1833, are reports of falls of gelatinous substance. That, according to newspaper reports, lumps of jelly were found on the ground at Rahway, NJ. The substance was whitish, or resembled the coagulated white of an egg. That Mr. H. H. Garland, of Nelson County, Virginia, had found a jelly-like substance of about the circumference of a 25-cent piece. That, according to a communication from A.C. Twining to Professor Olmsted, a woman at West Point, N.Y., had seen a mass the size of a teacup. It looked like boiled starch. That, according to a newspaper, of Newark, N.J., a mass of gelatinous substance, like soft soap, had been found. It possessed little elasticity, and, on the application of heat, it evaporated as readily as water. It seems incredible that a scientist would have such hardihood, or infidelity, as to accept that these things had fallen from the sky. Nevertheless, Professor Olmsted, who collected these lost souls, says, "The fact that the supposed deposits were so uniformly described as gelatinous substance forms a presumption in favor of the supposition that they had the origin ascribed to them." In contemporaneous scientific publications, considerable attention was given to Professor Olmsted's series of papers upon this subject of the November meteors. You will not find one mention of the part that treats of gelatinous matter. 5. I shall attempt not much of correlation of dates. A mathematic-minded positivist, with his delusion that in an intermediate state 2 × 2 = 4, whereas, if we accept continuity, we cannot accept that there are anywhere two things to start with, would search our data for periodicities. It is so obvious to me that the mathematic, or the regular, is the attribute of the universal, that I have not much inclination to look for it in the local. Still, in this solar system, as a whole, there is considerable approximation to regularity, or the mathematic is so nearly localized that eclipses, for instance, can, with rather high approximation, be foretold, though I have notes that would deflate a little the astronomer's vainglory in this respect, or would if that were possible. An astronomer is poorly paid, uncheered by crowds, considerably isolated, he lives upon his own inflations, deflate a bear and it couldn't hibernate. This solar system is like every other phenomenon that can be regarded as a whole, or the affairs of a ward are interfered with by the affairs of the city of which it is a part, city by county, county by state, state by nation, nation by other nations, all nations by climatic conditions by solar circumstances, sun by general planetary circumstances, solar system as a whole by other solar systems. So the hopelessness of finding the phenomena of entirety in the ward of a city. But positivists are those who try to find the unrelated in the ward of a city. In our acceptance, this is the spirit of cosmic religion. Objectively, the state is not realizable in the ward of a city. But, if a positivist could bring himself to absolute belief that he had found it, that would be a subjective realization of that which is unrealizable objectively. Of course, we do not draw a positive line between the objective and the subjective, or that all phenomena called things or persons are subjective within one all-inclusive nexus, and that thoughts within those that are commonly called persons are subsubjective. It is rather as if intermediateness strove for regularity in this solar system and failed, then generated the mentality of astronomers, and, in that secondary expression, strove for conviction that failure had been success. I have tabulated all the data of this book, and a great deal besides card system and several proximities, thus emphasized, have been revelations to me. Nevertheless, it is only the method of theologians and scientists, worst of all, of statisticians. For instance, by the statistic method, I could prove that a black rain has fallen regularly every 7 months, somewhere upon this earth. To do this, I'd have to include red rains and yellow rains, but, conventionally, I'd pick out the black particles in red substances and in yellow substances, and disregard the rest. Then, too, if here and there a black rain should be a week early or a month late, that would be acceleration or retardation. This is supposed to be legitimate in working out the periodicities of comets. If black rains, or red or yellow rains with black particles in them, should not appear at all near some dates, we have not read Darwin in vain, the records are not complete. As to other, interfering black rains, they'd be either gray or brown, or for them we'd find other periodicities. Still, I have had to notice the year 1819, for instance. I shall not note them all in this book, but I have records of 31 extraordinary events in 1883. Someone should write a book upon the phenomena of this one year, that is, if books should be written. 1849 is notable for extraordinary falls, so far apart that a local explanation seems inadequate. Not only the black rain of Ireland, May, 1849, but a red rain in Sicily and a red rain in Wales. Also, it is said, Tim's Yearbook, 1850-241, that, upon April 18 or 20, 1849, shepherds near Mt. Ararat, found a substance that was not indigenous, upon areas measuring 8 to 10 miles in circumference. Presumably it had fallen there. We have already gone into the subject of science and its attempted positiveness, and its resistances in that it must have relations of service. It is very easy to see that most of the theoretic science of the 19th century was only a relation of reaction against theologic dogma, and has no more to do with truth than has a wave that bounds back from a shore. Or, if a shop girl, or you or I, should pull out a piece of chewing gum about a yard long, that would be quite as scientific a performance as was the stretching of this Earth's age several hundred millions of years. All things are not things, but only relations, or expressions of relations, but all relations are striving to be the unrelated, or have surrendered to, and subordinated to, higher attempts. So there is a positivist aspect to this reaction that is itself only a relation, and that is the attempt to assimilate all phenomena under the materialist explanation, or to formulate a final, all-inclusive system, upon the materialist basis. If this attempt could be realized, that would be the attaining of realness, but this attempt can be made only by disregarding psychic phenomena, for instance, or, if science shall eventually give in to the psychic, it would be no more legitimate to explain the immaterial in terms of the material than to explain the material in terms of the immaterial. Our own acceptance is that material and immaterial are of a oneness, merging, for instance, in a thought that is continuous with a physical action. That oneness cannot be explained, because the process of explaining is the interpreting of something in terms of something else. All explanation is assimilation of something in terms of something else that has been taken as a basis, but, in continuity, there is nothing that is any more basic than anything else unless we think that delusion built upon delusion is less real than its pseudo-foundation.